Selling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Now, it's time to go deep for the exclusive info you need on the hockey team you love. This is Preds Insiders with your host, Ryan Porth.
Brought to you by Dr. Kelly Rice.
On your flagship home of the Predators Radio Network, Smashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Welcome into Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Ryan Porth here for another edition of Preds Insiders here in this offseason. And before we know it, 2 months from now, the regular season will commence across the National Hockey League. So obviously looking forward to that. Joining me this evening is Justin Bradford of Penalty Box Radio. He is no stranger to this show. Justin, how are we doing tonight?
I'm doing all right. It was a long weekend, a lot of sun at the Grand Prix.
Yes. So you were there as well, taking in all the festivities?
Yeah, I was able to enjoy it on Saturday there at the event, and then Sunday watch from home, wanted to see the beauty that Nashville could offer from the event. But it was really cool to see it, and really cool to see some of the Nashville Predators designed into racing uniforms. That was pretty cool to see too.
Yeah, so if anybody missed it over the weekend, either in person or on social media, the Predators helped us out and put Roman Josi, Ryan Johansson, and UC Saros in racing suits for cardboard cutouts that we took across the river to Nissan Stadium at our promotional setup, and people were able to come out and take selfies with those cutouts and enter to win tickets to a home game for this upcoming season. So a lot of people did that, and they were a big hit, including Nash. T-Rack with the Titans also took a photo with the cutout. So it was a fun weekend, and I'm sad you weren't able to attend yesterday, because I was there yesterday. I wasn't there Saturday, so we were both there just on different days this weekend, and where Amanda and I were standing on the Nissan Stadium ramp was right where the big wreck happened early on in the race. So we had a close-up view of what went down there, and it looked like I-24 either right now or about an hour ago.
It really did. And if anything, just to show, because most people that are listening obviously know that big events in Nashville, it's just becoming a natural thing now. Stanley Cup Final is showing that off. The All-Star Game is showing that off. It's really showing how Nashville is building itself for big events with all the hotels downtown. More places to eat, thankfully, are available too. And then, hey, going to get another taste with the Stadium Series too, for Nashville hosting a big downtown event. But I mean, every time you talk to people, and I know it sounds cliche sometimes, but they just love coming to Nashville. So these events, obviously they're probably going to tweak some things from the race, but people love coming here. Athletes love coming here. People just enjoy coming here. So it's interesting and fun to see all the different big events that are coming to Nashville.
And hey, this particular event at Nissan Stadium was a lot better run than the one that happened last weekend at Nissan Stadium. And I think the two of us can attest to that, Justin. We will leave it at that. But the off-season, Justin, I think we could call this now the dog days of summer across the National Hockey League. The start of the off-season at the end of July, early August, had a lot of activity. But now we're settling into those dog days of summer. They won't last very long, because coming up in about 6 weeks, the Predators and other teams around the league will be reporting to training camp. So a little bit of a quick turnaround here, but a lot of off-season reaction has been pouring in the last week or so, and Greg Wyshynski earlier today of ESPN.com gave out his off-season grades to this date, and Justin, he wasn't very kind to the Nashville Predators. In fact, on the grading scale of A to F, he gave the Nashville Predators a D for the off-season, saying, quote, "The bounty from the Ellis trade ended up being defenseman Philip Myers, who brings size, and center Cody Glass, whom the Golden Knights clearly felt wasn't going to blossom into a number one center. They shipped out Arvidsson before they had to leave him exposed in the expansion draft. Rene's retirement means that it's UC Saros' crease, which with Riddick as his cost-effective backup. The four-year deal with a $5 million AAV handed to Mikael Granlund was an overpayment. Worst of all, they couldn't entice Seattle to remove either Ryan Johansson or Matt Duchene from their cap. The offseason was symptomatic of a team moving in the wrong direction." That was Greg Wyshynski on ESPN.com earlier today, giving the Predators offseason grade a D. Justin, your reaction?
I mean, Greg makes a lot of good points there too. If anything, though, I it's not the perfect off season, but I think they've done some things within the realm that they were able to do to try to bandage some previous mistakes of contracts, which I will give them some credit for, thankfully. So, I mean, when I've talked on some of my various podcasts, I'm right around where I'm giving them a C. So, I mean, at least they're passing. And they're on that the whole high school average. You know, they're just average. I think it's just been an average offseason, but they unloaded some cap space to give them opportunity to sign other players or to re-sign, especially. And I know we're going to talk about that, some big-time RFAs for the Nashville Predators, and I think that's very important as well, too. Yeah, they weren't able to get rid of any of the $8 million guys, but that was going to be difficult. We already knew this was going to be difficult. And so had they were able to unload that, that would have been almost an instant A just because how did they pull that off? But being able to get rid of Arvidsson, who Seattle said they would take, and then being able to ship off Ellis to get something in return, even though you probably would want more and it would have been more during the season too. If anything, it's in hindsight, I think, is where that D probably comes from too, knowing where there was some value placed to the trade deadline and some players. I know we'll probably talk about him, Matthias Ekholm. It was very high value. The trade deadline, we saw so many rumors happening with him and even Ryan Ellis before. So I think my C comes in is that they've made some adjustments. As of right now, they still have spots open for the youth to finally actually come in and some opportunity for there to be competitions for roster spots, which is extremely important as well to actually have competition in this offseason or sorry, in the training camp. And then the draft, I think they actually did pretty well at the draft. So that's, I liken that into the offseason as well. But overall, I still give it a C because there's still some things that probably could have been done and should have been done. But I don't think it was as detrimental. It shows that I know David Poile's labeled as that competitive rebuild, but this is probably as close to a rebuild as we're going to see for a while from the Nashville Predators.
Sure. Well, I would probably go C minus. I'll meet you and Greg in the middle there of your two grades. I also want to see how the rest of this offseason plays out. Like, are they going to sign UC Saros to a team friendly deal, or are they going to overpay him to bring him back under contract? Are they going to make other moves via contract extensions or free agency or trades to make the long-term view of this franchise look different than it does now? I want to see how the rest of the offseason plays out before giving a final grade, but I think I would be right in the middle between you and Greg with a C minus grade for this offseason for the Nashville Predators. Here coming up in the next segment, we're going to be playing Deal or No Deal with certain Nashville Predators who are looking for either a new contract or a contract extension this offseason. So we'll be looking at Tolvanen, Saros, Ekholm, and Forsberg. So we'll be getting to that here in just a matter of minutes. But, you know, looking at some of the other grades, Justin, that Greg Wyshynski handed out in his ESPN.com piece. He gave the Arizona Coyotes an A+. He gave the Chicago Blackhawks an A. You know, a couple of teams within the Central Division getting high marks from Greg Wyshynski in this .com piece. Even the Blues, a B+.
Yeah, I mean, the one that stands out, obviously, is the Chicago Blackhawks in terms of the way they've fully retooled. And how, when we look at what they're able to do to reset some of their bad contracts in terms of who they're able to ship out and get rid of and get a little bit younger, but still trying to take full advantage of the time they have left with Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews. And that was big to be able to get rid of the Seabrook and the Keith contract. I mean, that was big for them. And then to be able to get Marc-Andre Fleury to say, yes, I will play, when most people are saying, nah, he's probably not going to play. Right. For him to say that he's going to play is a big deal for them as well. But they also have some good youth. So Chicago's restocked and they're going to be vying for a playoff spot. And the Nashville Predators obviously fall behind Chicago when it comes to how prepared I think they are to battle for a playoff spot, given some of the personnel changes and everything too. I mean, and then Seth Jones, even though I think it's an overpay for him when his new contract starts in 2022, they have Seth Jones now. So they have their key piece for their blue line. And then Arizona. Just curious to see them, and obviously curious to see what they're going to do in the Central Division. But I think the Nashville Predators, right off the as it stands right now, as I see it, and all things being the same in terms of they get their RFA signed and everything like that, I think Nashville's going to be bottom two, bottom three in the division, just the way I'm looking at it right now, because of the way the rest of the division has tooled. I mean, Dallas obviously is going to be good. Colorado, definitely going to be good. Minnesota is set to be good. I mean, it's tough when you look at this division and how you want to call it a competitive rebuild, but the Predators have to get some of these young guys playing time. And the way you get them playing time is to give them those spots, make them fight for it. And they have to learn how to lose. They have to know how to lose before they can learn how to win. And this could be one of those years that does that. If they were going to fully rebuild, I'd rather they fully embrace it so you can get for like a top five draft pick, but that's just not going to happen right now. The Predators need to be selling tickets and need to be getting butts in the seats and everything, but it's going to be difficult based on what the rest of the division's done.
All right, so last week the Predators re-signed defenseman Dante Fabbro before his arbitration date hit. Fabbro gets a two-year $4.8 million deal from the Nashville Predators, which equates to a $2.4 million AAV. Justin, what did you make of that contract?
I thought it was overall a fairly fair bridge deal in terms of Dante Fabbro and what you expect from him. I know people say, well, he didn't play in the playoffs. Well, there's a lot we probably don't know. And this is a prove it type of bridge deal that seems to be just about an average. Maybe would have liked to have seen a 2.2 or a 2, but that's really not much fluctuation there from 2.4 in terms of his AAV. So I think it's a fair value for him. And when you look at production overall, I mean, 12 points in 40 games, and in his full rookie season, he had 11 points in 64 games. So yeah, his goal production dropped. He didn't play as many games, but overall on pace for a better overall production year, he had a sophomore season. So there were some rough growing pains there. And so that's why you do a two-year deal. You bridge him. It allows him to come out and prove it, just like the same. We're going to talk about Ellie Tolvanen as well, what kind of deal they need from him. But this is giving Dante Fabbro that opportunity to say, hey, do you fully belong in the NHL? You're probably going to be paired with Matthias Ekholm is what it's going to look like. Do you have what it takes? Can you come out and continue to prove yourself, or are you going to get beaten on some of these plays? So I think fair deal. He got that raise because he was going to get that raise. They got that done, so they avoid arbitration for him. But that deal is a typical bridge deal, what you want to see. And then if he impresses, then he's probably going to be making over four in his next deal. And that's what you would want him to do, is to impress. You can sign him for more. But the good thing for the Predators, they then finally restock in the cupboard. If for some reason it doesn't work out, they do have some guys that are going to be waiting in the wings by that time in 2 years to come and try to take his spot. So that's a good position for the Predators to be in now. They have some defensive prospects that can come in if for some reason Dante Fabbro doesn't work out.
I was a little surprised that the number ended up at 2.4. And this is being maybe a little nitpicky, but I thought it would land in between 1.5 and 2 per season for Dante Fabbro. I was a little surprised that it got up to 2.4, but that's just me.
I mean, it could have been lower. That's why I said even like 2 probably would have been ideal more for me. But at this point, it was probably a difference of what, half a mil. And everybody's just like, we don't want to deal with arbitration, because who knows what an unbiased decider is going to do when you go to arbitration. Sure. They might have been out of pocket even more money. So the Predators, I'm sure, are like, no, we'll get it done. And just went along with it because they had the cap space. That's a good thing. They weren't strapped for cap space when they made those deals to get rid of the Ellis contract and things. So that's a good position to be in, to where you can just say, no, we'll go with this. You're good. Thanks.
Deal or no deal? It's one of my favorite TV shows, but we're going to play a different version of Deal or No Deal on the other side with players on this Predators roster that either need a new contract or need a contract extension. I'll explain coming up next. He's Justin Bradford. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening to Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back in. It's Preds Insiders. Preds Insiders is brought to you every week by Dr. Kelly Rice. For all your dental or sleep apnea needs, visit KellyERice.com. Ryan Porth joined by Justin Bradford this evening. Justin's work can be found at Penalty Box Radio. Justin, there are a couple of players that still need contracts, current restricted free agents. We talked about Dante Fabbro last segment. He got his deal. Ellie Tolvanen and UC Saros, I would assume, are up next for David Poile to get done. UC Saros' arbitration date is August 18th. So that's coming up here in a matter of 9 days. I would be surprised if it got to that point. So we should be hearing about a new Soros contract in the next 8 to 9 days, I would guess. I would be surprised if that got to arbitration. And we will also look at the two Swedes later on in the segment, Mattias Ekholm and Philip Forsberg. Let's start, Justin, with Eli Tolvanen. And this is something that I proposed to Joe Rexroad last week on this very show, and I stumped him on proposing this contract. So how we're going to do this of deal or no deal is I'm going to be in the shoes of David Poile, and you, Justin, are going to be in the shoes of the player. Okay? So okay. I'm going to give you a contract offer, and you're going to play the role of the player saying deal or no deal on that specific contract offer. So I gave Joe this offer last week as if he was Tolvanen. 6 years, $18 million, which would be a $3 million cap hit over the course of 6 years. Justin, do you say deal or no deal?
Okay, do I need to give you an immediate answer? Do I explain myself before I give it?
Explain. You can explain.
Okay, so what I'm going to look at, if I'm the player and if I'm Eli Tolvanen, who has had some ups and downs in terms of being a little bit of a later bloomer in terms of expectations and things of that sort, had a little bit of a coming out party, thankfully for him, in terms of what he looked like before there was an injury. This is one of those cases where it's like, are you going to come and take the guaranteed money, or would you rather the team put you in a bridge to where you can prove yourself even more and guarantee big money? So it's a gamble. This is a big time gamble, because you could have that long contract like what Colton Sissons has or what Cal Yarncroke had, where you know you're going to get some guaranteed money for long term. And if you're thinking long term, that's good. I mean, for you, for your family, for what you need in the future and everything like that, to have that guaranteed type of money too, or even if you get traded, you're going to get paid. So the way I'm looking at that is, if you're going to take a $18 million contract over 6 years and get that $3 million per year, I would take that, because you're betting basically that you're going to have longevity more than anything else. And yeah, maybe you have this breakout year and it becomes to where you're the biggest steal in terms of contracts, like what Mattias Ekholm developed into, to where you're getting vastly underpaid overall. But I think in terms of the way Tolvanen's development has gone, that's a good deal for both sides, because then you're locked into that, to where if he does have a big deal, then you are betting on you having a longer career. Now, I don't think Eli Tolvanen would take that deal. I think that he would probably take a one or a two and bet on himself, just given in terms of, and not saying that he has an ego, but giving it on a competitive player's ego, that they bet on themselves to have a bigger year and to really impress. Because if he has a really good breakout year after a 1 year bridge, and then you demand a 4 year $20 million deal or a 4 year $16 million deal or something like that, to where you're getting more per year. So that's a good question. I personally would go for the deal, just looking at longevity. I don't know many younger players that are going to do that unless they kind of know their role. And we don't really know Tolvanen's role. I mean, Sissons knew his role. When you think about what they probably explained to him, same with Yarncroke, because like, look, longevity, you're going to be a guy that goes up and down the lineup, but Tolvanen has that still that potential to be a top six forward, to where he could be making a lot more money than just $3 million cap hit per year. So it'd be interesting to see what goes with that. So that's a really good question that you asked.
So officially, are you going deal or no deal?
Officially, no deal.
Okay. See, here's the thing. Being in the shoes of David Poile, I'm trying to lock up Tolvanen into a Yossi-type deal, right, where you might be overpaying on the front end, but you would be getting a bargain on the back end. That's you what hope. I would be hoping for out of a contract like that, and hoping that Tolvanen sees the $18 million. Obviously, in the NHL, that's guaranteed. So You're putting an $18 million contract in front of someone as young as Eli Tolvanen. That would be my hope out of that Tolvanen would say yes to that.
It's a good hope. It's just given Eli Tolvanen's interviews and performances and things like that before, I think he would want to bet on himself to do more, to be able to get a bigger contract. So, I mean, I think it's going to be a 1 or 2 year bridge, and that's what's going to happen.
Okay. All right. Moving on.
I think.
All right. You're in the shoes of UC Soros. I'm once again in the shoes of David Poile. I am offering you, UC, a three-year deal worth $15 million, which is $5 million per season. Justin, or should I say UC, deal or no deal?
No deal.
That was a quick one.
That's a quick one. I mean, we see right now how Igor Shesterkin has got a four-year 22.6. That's an AAV of 5.65. Yusuf Saros dragged this team to the playoffs. All of it is in his hands right now of what he can demand, really. And I would be looking at 4 years minimum if I'm Saros. 4 years minimum, and I would say probably needs to be at least 5.5 to maybe even 6 per year is what Saros' camp should be able to demand. And it's one of those things like, of course you should be able to demand that. Look at how he proved himself when the team absolutely needed him the most during the season. So 3 years, 15, no deal. I just can't see that happening.
My counter to that, as David Poile, is that he only really proved it over the course of a 30-game stretch down the stretch for the Nashville Predators in the second half of last season. And I for me, if I were David Poile, I would try to get as short of a term as possible on this and not risk yourself locking yourself into like a 5 or 6 year deal with UC Saros.
No, yeah.
Where then you're bringing Yaroslav Askarov into the fold at that point. And if it's a 6 year deal, you could be paying two goalies somewhat premium money. Or more than just, you know, Askarov's entry-level contract. So I'm being mindful of that, and I'm trying to negotiate on the shorter end on both term and money. And the shorter the term, I would say, the less the money is.
Yeah, and that's why I say four. I think four is a good look because you look at when Askarov would come over and how it would take for him to develop. Because, I mean, when he does come over – don't think it's going to be okay. Time for the Preds.
Right.
They would want him to develop at least half a year in Milwaukee and maybe serve as a backup for 1 year to really get acclimated to everything too. So that's why 4 years I think is pretty sound. When you look at that deal and also gives Saros an opportunity to prove himself this 4 years to where, whether it's with the Predators or somewhere else, that he could even make more money because he's still fairly young.
So you think 4 years in the neighborhood of $22 million?
Yes.
Okay, that would be about a $5.5 million average value per season. All right, we move on to Mattias Ekholm. And Mattias Ekholm, I am offering you 4 years, $23 million. Deal or no deal?
4 years. That puts him at 35. 4 years at... What was the value again?
5.75.
I would actually say if they could do the 5.75 and make it 5 years, it's a deal.
If I'm David Poile, I don't know if I could go 5 years. That would take you through 36.
I know.
I'm wincing. You can't see me, but I'm wincing.
I know. Okay. I'm not saying I'm pushing for that.
Sure.
I'm trying to put myself in the mind of the player and the agent, right?
Sure.
And making this is the final contract of a career kind of thing is what I'm looking at. So I think personally, I think that's a fair deal for him. It gives him a raise. It's a 4 year deal. So there's longevity for him and his family and everything too. But I mean, their camp's probably going to be pushing for a little bit longer term because then he's getting paid. But I will say this just to give an actual answer. I would take the deal.
All right. So you would go deal over no deal for Mattias Ekholm at 4 years, $23 million. I think another thing to keep in mind there too with Ekholm is that would come in at a cheaper number than Ryan Ellis.
Yes.
Like 3 years after Ryan Ellis signed his contract.
Yes.
So I think that would be a fair number for Mattias Ekholm. That is, you know, the one thing I do worry about with Ekholm's next deal is the fact that all of these defensemen are getting contracts north of $9 million, and that could that could push Ekholm closer to Ellis territory, which is 6.25.
Yeah, that's very likely to happen. But the way I see comfort level is Ekholm just wants to go and do his job. And so it's really going to, I think, come down to agent more than anything else and what he wants to push for. Because Ekholm seems to be that the blue collar hard worker type of thing. And as long as it's a fair deal and he has longevity and consistency for him and his family, I think it's going to be okay.
Okay. All
right. Because he's not like a superstar face of things. I think where we're going to see more things come up with is Forsberg.
Sure.
Which we're going to hit.
All right. Well, you lead me right into Philip Forsberg, who, just like Matthias Ekholm, has 1 year left on his contract. And since we're past July 28th, can sign an extension at any given time.
Mm-hmm.
Phil, I am offering you 6 years, $43.5 million. Which is an average value of 7.25. Deal or no deal?
See, I don't think Poyle's going to offer that, but I would take that deal.
You would take the deal.
I would take the deal. And the reason why is the term is good and the money is a bump, but it's not like a huge bump. It's a bump that, yeah, I mean, he's one of the faces of the Predators offense, obviously, but it's because he hasn't broken out into superstar territory that you would hope and expect him to be at. I mean, he's consistently putting up, what, 25 plus goals, it seems, overall in normal times, in less games, and he's had his fair share of injuries. I mean, he has not played a full season since 16-17, where he had 82 games. He's had his fair share of just injuries where he's going to miss some time. He's a little bit streaky. So I think that's what the Predators are going to go against with. But if that deal is offered, you take that deal. Just given his age, given his performance overall, because that would get him to 32, to where he could sign one more contract to close his career, go off somewhere else or things like that. He gets paid. And the Predators are going to have the cap space for it, or should, with some of the moves that they've made, or they might even make more moves with Johansson and Duchesne in the next year to clear out more space for him. So yeah, I would take that deal. I'm not sure the Predator is going to be offering that to start with Forsberg. And a lot of it's going to come down to, as I'm sure multiple people have discussed, what's the direction of the team? Is Philip Forsberg going to want to stay in Nashville if the direction of the team is rebuild? Because he's the type of player that, being a competitor, I would think would probably want to go to a team that is in fully the Stanley Cup window to open. As also 6 years being locked in like that, is that something that Forsberg is going to want to do? And is he confident that the team is going to be reopening their window to truly push for a Stanley Cup within those 6 years?
So, all right, so you don't feel like the Preds are going to give him that much of a term? Offer him that much of a term, or go as high as 7.25? Like, which one do you think is further from what would actually happen?
I think the term, if anything, would go more around the four-year term.
You think so?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think Forsberg would say yes to that?
For that money, I would think so. Because then you're weighing the whole, do I want to make money? Do I want to win a championship? Does it matter?
Well, I mean, the thing that could be going through his mind too is, why would I sign this now? Mm-hmm. If I'm being offered, if I'm being offered a four-year deal, why would I sign that now when, if health goes my way this season, score 30 mm-hmm. goals, you could go to the open market next year and get more than a four-year deal and potentially more than the 7.25.
Oh, I agree. That's why I don't think a deal with Forsberg is going to happen as soon as the deal with Ekholm is going to happen.
Sure.
It's going to be a wait and see.
Yeah. Well, that will definitely, if that is the case and they start the season without a contract extension, I think that's going to be a little bit of like an elephant in the room. Whenever talking about the Nashville Predators, there's going to be that lingering question of whether or not Philip Forsberg will be here long term. So, all right. So you took the deal if you were Matthias Ekholm and Philip Forsberg, and you said no mm-hmm. deal to Tolvanen and Saros.
Uh huh.
All right. So 2-2,
oh boy.
2-2 in this round of deal or no deal. All right. So, on the other side, speaking of the future, Justin does a lot of work looking at the prospects within the Nashville Predators system and in hockey as a whole, and we're going to get his thoughts on the farm system that the Predators have and whether or not this farm system, as it stands now, is good enough to compete long term. We'll get to that on the other side. He's Justin Bradford. I'm Ryan Porth. This is Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. It is Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, and The Game National app. Ryan Porth, Justin Bradford here with you on this Monday evening. Justin, before we get to the farm system deep dive from you, I wanted to share something that caught my eye last night as I was perusing one of the sports books. Mm-hmm. In the now called Caesars Sportsbook, they've got a lot of future odds in the National Hockey League. And you could even invest in the 2022 Vezina Trophy winner. The odds for UC Saros to win the Vezina Trophy, mind you, this is the guy who finished fifth in the voting this past season. The odds for UC Saros are 40-1. He is behind the likes of Sergei Bobrovsky, Jack Campbell, Tuukka Rask, Chris Driger, Jordan Bennington, Alex Nedeljkovic, who is now in Detroit. Don't know how much winning he's going to be doing. Linus Olmark has higher odds than him. Thatcher Demko has higher odds than Saros. Found these odds to be a little interesting from one Caesar Sportsbook. 40-1 for UC Saros to win the Vezina.
That seems a little interesting, some of the players that are ahead of Saros, given his performance to close up the season. And I know it's a smaller sample size, but I mean, Saros was even being talked about for other trophies aside from the Vezina. So I'm very curious on that one. Maybe I'm guessing it's more of the thing where they just want to see a bigger sample size out of him. But even then, some of the players ahead of him are very curious given the teams they're going to be on as well.
I know. And also the Norris Trophy odds, Roman Josi is 18-1, which was equal to Quinn Hughes, Miro Heiskanen, and Jacob Slavin. We will see how all that shakes out. Just an interesting observation that I made last night while perusing.
Absolutely.
Caesar Sportsbook. All right, so the Preds just wrapped up the NHL draft a couple of weeks ago where they took Fedor Svechkov and Zachary Leroux in the first round, where they traded both second-round picks to jump up into the first round and draft Leroux. And these are two centers, two forwards, that are being added to the cupboard. And I kind of want to get your thoughts, Justin, on where you think this farm system is. And if you feel like there's enough talent within this farm system to come up in the next 3 to 5 years and help this Predators team compete, because we all know this Predators team in the last, I'd say, 3 or 4 years, they have lacked a number of players that could come up and contribute on an entry-level contract, which has forced David Poile to perhaps overspend in either free agency or trade. And we are seeing some of the domino effects of that still to this day. Where do you think this farm system is for the Nashville Predators, and is it strong enough?
Well, I'll say this too. The Predators, and knowingly, because David Poile's addressed this because I've asked him about it multiple times, have shot themselves in the foot with their draft classes because they've traded away so many draft picks in so many years trying to run for that cup.
Right.
And so it takes a long time to rebuild a cupboard too. I mean, a long time. We're not talking like 2 or 3 years to rebuild a cupboard. It takes 4, 5, 6 years to rebuild a cupboard because a development takes a long time, and every player gets to their peak when they're going to make that jump to professional hockey at different paces. And when you think about it too, it's a great feeling when you have one player make it from each draft class. That's what you'd expect, is one player from each draft class to make it. So when you have multiple drafts where you don't have top picks, or say you only have your first, but then you don't have a second, or you don't have a third, or you don't pick until the fourth round, that gets really detrimental to building your system. Because yes, you might have this diamond in the rough that you find in the fourth or fifth round, but more likely than not, it's not going to happen. You're drafting those players to fill up your system, to be in Milwaukee, or to maybe make that jump, and you just all of a sudden found something out there. So that's what's been difficult too, is that they have to be able to stick to their guns and say, we have to keep our picks so we can develop them more than anything else. And if you do that, eventually things are going to pan out for you just based on sheer luck more than anything else. It should work out that you get a couple good players. As it stands right now, there are a couple players in the system that definitely can come in and contribute in the next few years. I mean, Philip Tomasino is obviously the big one, that there's the hope there, and there was nowhere near talking about the same thing with like they did with Ellie Tolvin, and there's no bust territory for Tomasino because, I mean, he's gotten some experience. It was good for him to get experience in the AHL last year, even though it was a little weird having to play for the Chicago Wolves and not the Milwaukee Admirals. But, I mean, he has that experience. We have Igor Afanasyev, who's been playing pro in Russia. And he's that potential to be a power forward as well that you could see actually contributing to this lineup, not maybe next season, but the season after that. And then Fedor Svechkov, again, it's a first-round pick, but he's still probably 2 years away from that happening because he's playing over in Russia. And then you probably want him to at least spend a year in Milwaukee as well, too. But the good thing for him is he's going to be playing with Yaroslav Askarov, which is going to be good for him to have that experience, too, with a fellow teammate and organization for the Natural Predators. They do have some guys that have potential to make the lineup. Being Rem Pitlick is one of them too. He's been biding his time waiting. You have a guy that's under contract now in Luke Evangelista. Then also, like you said, Zachary Tau, who is a guy that signed his contract. And you know what type of player he is. He is not the player that's going to come in and be flashy and put up offensive numbers, but you know what you have in him, and you have a poop disturber is what you have in Zachary Larue. And that's what's interesting there, is that they know what they got with him, is that he is a guy that can be a disturber, but he also has a pretty decent shot as well. But they're going to be leaning on him to be something of the Nashville Predators' own Tkachuk. Is what they're probably going to want out of him, that he's going to mix it up and he's going to have some variables that'll make him put up some offensive numbers somewhere, probably in the third line or the fourth line. And they're probably going to want to see him and give him a good look this year in camp and see what happens. And then for real, the next season after this one, to really get him going. But I mean, for him to be quickly the first one signed of the draft class shows that they know what they got out of him. It's the question of, was he worth number 27 overall? But the Predators seem to think so. They had two first round picks in this draft. So it shows they know the importance of drafting on their board who they want. But there are plenty of players, I think, in the Predator system now that can make a difference in the 2 or 3 years that actually can contribute, because they've been working to get to that point as well. And that's not just in forwards, but it's on defense as well. You have Jeremy Davies, who got his chance. You had David Ferentz. Those are guys that, while not going to be a first pairing overall guys, those are guys that could slide in as a fourth overall defenseman or five or six guys you can contribute, because you do have your top guys right now. You have other ones like, let's see, Luke Prokop, who has signed his deal as well. And so let's see what's going to happen with him, because he's a bigger dude. And then in terms of goaltending, you're still waiting to see what happens with Connor Ingram, who the Predators were able to get for a seventh round. That's why they didn't draft in the seventh round this year, because of Connor Ingram from Tampa Bay. And then he's the guy that's going to be the number one in Milwaukee and potential to be a backup to Saros. Because Riddick is obviously one of those things that's a fill-in right now there too. And then you think Devin Cooley's going to go into Milwaukee eventually, and Tomas Vomáčka is going to go into Milwaukee eventually too. Not saying those guys have an opportunity to play for the Predators per se, but it's just biding that time until Askarov gets over. So I think the system is healthier than it has been before. I know Corey Pronman's really been down on the Predator system for a while, but I think they're finally getting to a healthier point with what they've been able to draft. And I mean, in terms of the farm system, I'd put it probably at a C+, B-. Right now, for where they're at, they still don't have extreme top end talent, but it's because they've been competitive. And if you're competitive, you're not going to get those top five, top 10 draft picks all the time too. And you have to wait and see what happens to some of these guys. But I think they have a decent system going right now. They actually have players you can be excited about that will be battling for spots in the upcoming season, the next two seasons as well. So that's where I kind of put the standpoint for the Predators. And they've looked like they've been open to drafting more Russians and more of those guys that are playing the KHL, like a lot of Vladislav Yaremenko, like a Semyon Chistyakov. They're looking at some other opportunities to get players that maybe aren't getting as many looks as some other teams may be giving them.
You know, the one thing that I wonder with this farm system for the Nashville Predators, you know, they've been restocking the cupboard, understandably so, and they've needed to do that. But I mean, do they have how many potential top six forwards are there truly in this system? I mean, you would hope Svechkov and Larue are two. You just spent first round picks on them. Philip Tomasino is obviously somebody that that you would expect to be not only a top six forward, but an impact goal scorer for this team, or at least an impact overall forward for this team. But like, outside of those three guys, who do you think could remotely have a possibility of becoming a top six forward for this team?
No one. I mean, maybe Yegorov and Asiev could be the one that could be a solid second line player, just given his build for the NHL, being 6'3", 203 pounds right now and only 20 years old. He's built to be a power forward, a guy that has a pretty good shot, that could be pretty good on the dart, on the wing, and especially on the power play for the Predators in the future. And there's still time. I mean, he's still very, very young, and he's getting a lot of the playing experience from the O and then Russia during the pandemic year. And I mean, potentially with Milwaukee the next season, we'll see what happens, what happens with the rule with junior hockey and what's going to happen there again with everything going on. But there really aren't many, but it's because the Predators have been so competitive. They haven't had those high-end draft picks. And I think that's okay, because right now, the way the top six is set, it's pretty set. And so you want your Philip Tomasino to break through. You want your Zachary Leroux, but I think he's more of a middle six guy. Same thing with Fedor Svechkov, is that he's more set up to be a second line center at his max, and not a first line player at all. Just given the way that this draft was, there weren't many first line potential players in the entire draft. I mean, we'll be honest here. There just weren't. It was a weaker draft overall. There could be those guys that surprise a lot of teams and people out there because they weren't able to be seen as much. And maybe they play with a big chip on their shoulder and impress, but the quality of players overall, especially once you get past the first five or so, there's not going to be many full-on first-line guys, especially where the Predators were picking. Your hope is that you get guys that will be good middle six additions, and that's fine. I mean, you have to develop from within like that too, and sometimes get a good free agent. But unless the Predators go all in on being bad, they're not going to be able to draft many guys with first-line, first-pairing potential unless they just find a good diamond in the rough.
We've thrown out a lot of names that are forwards. We have not thrown out a lot of names that are defensemen. And we all know that this Predators team has prided themselves on developing defensemen over the years, and that's been their bread and butter when it comes to the draft and development. Justin, do you see any top four potential defensemen in this pipeline?
I mean, when you look at some of these other draft picks, I mean, the guys that I think could surprise a little bit because they don't get talked about near as much because of where they're playing are guys like Yaremenko or Chistyakov, with where they've been playing over in Russia in the KHL. Those are guys that could make that jump and be defensemen, at least let's say a three or a four, potentially. I don't want to max them out because I just haven't seen enough of them or seen enough video of them, I'll be honest. David Ferentz has potential as well. I mean, he's a little bit older, and you saw a little bit of him, but he still has to fully season as well to see what's really going to happen with him. I think Jeremy Davies is a guy that could be a number four. Again, no top pairing. Luke Prokop from the Calgary Hitmen right now, he was the third round overall. He was a third rounder from 2020. I think he's a guy that's going to be a five or a six. So there are defensemen in there. It's tough to get a top pairing one unless they surprise you. And then you see a few guys from this draft of Anton Olsen, Ryan Ufko, or Jack Mateer. Ufko is one of those ones that a lot of the draft experts were saying was one of the best value picks, where they got him at 115 because he was ranked so much higher, that he's that guy that could be the surprise player out of that draft class. And then you have other guys that are a little more project players like Anton Olsen and Jack Mateer, because Olsen was a guy that was an overager as well. So it's really tough to gauge that, but they have plenty of players, I think, that have NHL caliber that could make the team on the blue line, that could at least contribute. And it's going to make it interesting for Milwaukee, because you're going to have Carl Taylor get his hands on some of these guys in the next few seasons and see what he can do to help season them if he doesn't take an NHL job somewhere else, because he has the talent for it. No kidding. But the development system in Milwaukee has been great for these guys because you're getting some seasoning. And finally, like an Alex Carrier, he's been holding and waiting for his time. And he proved himself, and it allowed the Predators to move Ryan Ellis. So if you get a player that's able to come up and do that and surprise a little bit and be able to push the Predators to make other decisions, that's what you want out of these guys. Carey was never one of those guys that was going to be probably making the top pairing. And it looks like the way things are setting up, he's probably going to be paired with Roman Josi of all things too. So things can happen depending on handedness, which can help decide where these players are going to fit too. If they just have to put him in a top four role for the defense because of their handedness and how the rest of the contract situations work out for the Predators over the next 3 years.
I think my biggest takeaway from this discussion here about the farm system was the reminder of it's still going to be a few years before we see exactly what it is that the Predators have in this farm system. And that's a little bit of a scary thought with the state of the team at the NHL level.
Yeah. It is. And I mean, that's where I know we've talked in previous off seasons before too, that if it was affordable and able for this organization to go through a rebuild moment, what it could do for them in terms of the farm system to where it would truly set them up to really open their cup window in 3 or 4 years. I mean, I'm not pushing to say they need to be bad, but if they embrace the ability to, if they were able to, and I know there's probably some things that restrict that, if they're able to do that, to be able to finish in the bottom five teams and be in the lottery. And if, especially next season, how deep that draft is, to be able to get one of those type of potential generational type players or an elite player that is going to be able to come in and contribute at 18 or 19 years old, how it could just change the way you build the franchise for the next few years. I just don't think they're at that point where they can do that, even though it's strong right now. Fan attendance has been overall strong. Ticket sales are strong. It's just, there's a lot of competition in this town with the Titans being good, Nashville SC being good, and so many other things happening too. They have to be able to fill that house to afford a lot of things. And not saying they're in trouble or anything like that, just you have to. That's the state of the business. And it'd be really difficult for them to go through a couple really lean years, but what it could do for them in the future is set them up for some cup runs. It really could. So it's a tough situation to be in, because in order to get those really big generational talent players, you either look into it or you have to be bad for a couple of years and play that lottery system there too, which they just cannot afford to do right now, but it would change so many things for this team.
Well, and going into a quote unquote rebuild never guarantees that you're going to get out of it in a short amount of time. Just
the Buffalo.
Look at the Buffalo Sabres, or even, I mean, the Edmonton Oilers to an extent. I mean, yes, right, they've got two of the best players in the league with Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, but, you know, up until a year or two ago, even with those two guys on their roster, they were still kind of sort of building things up, and they're still not where they really want to be as a Stanley Cup contender. They're not, to me, they're not really close to that. So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of that tough predicament. I've been mentioning this in the offseason, that mediocre middle. They're right smack dab in the middle of that, and it'll be difficult for them to get themselves out of that unless, like you said, they luck into a few things. But Justin Bradford of Penalty Box Radio, always a pleasure to have you on the show, my friend. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to join me here on Preds Insiders.
Yeah, Ryan, appreciate it. Thanks as always for having me.
All right, great stuff as always from Justin Bradford of Penalty Box Radio. Always appreciate him coming on the program here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. It's Preds Insiders, Ryan Porth. We will talk to you next Monday at 6 right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.